Hi, this is Aaron Newcomb, and on this episode of Floss Weekly, Jonathan Bennett joins me to talk about libgit2. It's the open source library you may not have ever heard of, but it powers some of the amazing Git repositories and software on the internet. So you're not going to want to miss this episode. Stay tuned. It's coming up right now.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Aaron Newcomb and Jonathan Bennett, episode 453 for Thursday, October 5th, 2017. Libgit2. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Hover. Register a domain name with Hover and build your online brand today. Go to hover.com/twit and save 10% off your first purchase. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/floss. Hey, everybody. Aaron Newcomb here. Welcome to Floss Weekly. I'm not Randall Schwartz. Mayor Newcomb, Randall is actually out. I'll give you one guess where he's at. One guess only. If you're a regular to this show and you listen or watch every week, you know that Randall does take a cruise from time to time. And yes, that's what he's doing. He's out on a cruise, enjoying life, swabbing the deck, playing shuffleboard. I don't know what you do on a cruise. I'm not a big cruise guy. But that's where Randall is. I am here in my lovely abode. Filling in for Randall because we got a great show today. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. But before we do, I want to introduce the lovely co-host we have for today and seems like every day on this show now, Jonathan Bennett. Jonathan, how's it going?
It's good. It's good to be here. Yeah, I was here last week. I'm here this week, and I believe I'm doing it next week as well. So just becoming the regular, the old hand at it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we appreciate you helping us out with the show. It's hard. Randall, if you don't know, Randall does a lot of work preparing for this show, trying to get the guests lined up. And then he also has to try to get the co-hosts lined up as well, because we all have busy schedules and day jobs and things that we're working on. And so, Jonathan, appreciate you jumping on board today and last time and next time and helping out every time. Really appreciate that. Yeah, so we got a great show today. We're going to be talking about libgit2. With Edward Thompson in just a minute. I don't know if you know much about libgit2, Jonathan. Do you know anything about this?
Well, obviously, I've worked with Git. I think just about everybody that's done anything with software has worked with Git by now. But libgit2 is apparently a library to be able to do Git things from within C, which is interesting. I'm not sure what the use case is, you know, what different products use it. I do know of a certain Microsoft project that uses Git that this may have something to do with, but we will have to ask Edward about that. I would just be guessing at this point.
Yeah, well, I don't know much about it either. I do know just from work, the company that I work with for New Relic, we do a lot with developers and specifically DevOps guys or SREs, as they're known in the industry, who support software development for big teams of engineers that are working on projects. And so this sounds like something that they might use perhaps to get a little bit more programmatically involved in the way that they deploy code and things. Then that's my guess, at least based on the little that I know about it as well. So I'm going to see. Hopefully, one of us is close to this, and if not, that's okay because we're all here to learn. So we'll do that in just a minute. We're going to bring on our guests in just a minute. But before we get to that, we do want to take just a second to thank our sponsors. And our first sponsor today is Hover.com. So if you don't know, building your online brand has never been more important than it is today. Your online identity begins with, of course, your domain name. Show the online community who you are and what you're passionate about by registering a domain name with Hover. Hover has over 400 extensions to choose from to help you brand yourself online. That's a lot of choices to help you find the perfect domain name. If you're a designer or a creative professional, you can use .design instead of using a generic .com or .biz domain name. By using .design, you're telling everyone exactly what you do. Stand out and brand yourself online with the perfect domain name for you or your business. .design domain names are on sale for the entire month of October for only $5.99. That's 85% off your first year and half the price of a .com. So whatever your interest may be, Hover has an extension for you. Maybe it's .tech, or maybe it's .art, or maybe even it's .yoga. With Hover, you also get a best-in-class customer support team and no upsells. Hover's Connect feature, which allows you to connect your domain name to any host or website builder with a few simple clicks, and you get personal email that matches your domain and further supports your online identity. So start building your online brand today. Go to hover.com/twit and get 10% off your first purchase. That's hover.com/twit, and we thank Hover for their support. And now it's time to bring on our guest. Edward Thompson is joining us today. He's the maintainer of the GitLib 2 project, which provides a linkable library for low-level management of Git repositories. Edward, thank you for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Great. So were we close at all? I mean, we're kind of guessing a little bit, which is part of our job. We don't want to know too much going into this. At least that's the excuse we give ourselves. But tell us about LibGit 2. I mean, what's it all about?
Yeah, so it's a linkable library, like you said, that manipulates your Git repositories. And like you said, it's written in C, but there's actually bindings for a bunch of other languages. So we've got a project called Rugged that is the Ruby bindings that sit on top of LibGit 2. So you can, from your Ruby application, manage a Git repository. And the reason that's cool, especially for Ruby, is that you could maybe build a Git hosting site on top of this. We've also got a .NET wrapper. It's called LibGit 2 Sharp. So if you wanted to build your Git hosting application on .NET, you could use that to manage your Git repositories also. So that's the big use case, really, is the online Git hosting providers. Those are our biggest users by far. So GitHub uses it, GitLab and Visual Studio Team Services all use it to really manage the bits inside your Git repository, to finish pull requests, to stuff like that, show you history.
Right. So this sounds like it's important for people that don't necessarily want to use GitHub. It's similar. It enables you to create your own GitHub. Is that the way it works?
It does. But so from a developer perspective, that's exactly right. If you wanted to, you could build your own GitHub, but you could be a little more modest in your goals if you wanted. Anything you want to do, maybe as part of your pull request workflow, you want to change a little something or inspect something in your repository, you could use LibGit 2 to actually take a look inside the repository. Maybe look at history, validate that a commit message was set correctly, something like that.
Cool. And maybe just so that just to level set here, I'm sure most people that watch this show are familiar with what Git is, just in general. But maybe we should cover that just a elevator pitch or just 30 seconds about what Git is, just to make sure everybody's on the same page so they don't stop listening to us because they're like, I don't understand what they're talking about. So sure. maybe we should start there just for a second, just to level set with everybody. I mean, what is Git? Where did it come from? What do people use it for?
Yeah, that's a great question. I kind of take it for granted that everybody knows what Git is these days because it's so incredibly popular. Git is a version control system. It is the version control system that Linus Torvalds built to manage the Linux kernel. He was using CVS, then he was using a different proprietary distributed version control system, and he wasn't happy with either of those, so he wanted to build his own. So in, I think, just a weekend, right, he hacked together the very beginnings of the Git version control system. And it's, a distributed version control system for the distributed nature of the Linux kernel team. It's great for open source, and it's unique. Distributed version control systems are unique in that you don't need a central server, so it's perfect for a team working distributed, working geographically disparate from each other. Because if you're building the Linux kernel, where do you put your version control server? You know, somewhere that is best for Linus, somewhere that's best for one of his lieutenants, somewhere, you know, everybody's going to suffer from that. So Git is by far the most popular distributed version control system. And at this point, I think it's just the most popular version control system, period. So,
yeah, in the past, there's been others, right? I remember using Subversion.
Sure.
I think for a while. And what was the other one? Was it Mercurial? Was it Mercurial?
It was Mercurial, yeah. Mercurial is still going strong.
Yeah, so it's not the only one, right? But it took off in popularity really quickly, as I recall. In fact, and it's been around for a while now. It still seems new to me. I guess I'm getting old, but I use it all the time. And in fact, if you want to hear, you can go back to one of our very first episodes. Episode 19 here on Floss Weekly was all about Git. And we had Junio Hamano was on talking about Git. And you know, you can go back and listen to that if you really want to geek out and you want to learn more about it. Although probably a lot of the information there is out of date because that was in September 1st, 2007, if you can believe it or not. That's how long we've been doing the show. But, but yeah, people use Git all the time, and then it developed, there needed to be kind of a place for people to go, right? They didn't want to set up their own environments, right? So there's a place to host these environments, and I think the most popular one by far, I don't know if you'd agree with me or not, is called GitHub, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, very popular for open source projects.
Yeah. So you can go to GitHub and you can keep your software there. I always recommend to software developers, you know, that are just starting out or just going to college or whatever to get on GitHub and start putting their software there so that people can find it, use it, show what you can do if you're looking for a job. So it's good for that. And then when did this library come about? How old is this library?
I should have the exact date in front of me. So a guy named Sean Pierce at Google decided that he wanted to be able to build some tools on top of Git, and he wanted an actual library to do it, right? He didn't just want to call Git space, you know, just exec the actual Git executable and run Git, I don't know, merge or Git log. So he wanted an actual library to do it. So he started building libgit2, and about, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks into the project, let's say, he looked at this and said, what am I doing? Why am I writing a bunch of C code, right? I'm rebuilding Git. I have this opportunity to like start over, and I'm doing it in C. So he just kind of walked away. He said, enough is enough. What am I doing writing C in my life? And then he started JGit, which is yet another linkable library for manipulating your Git repositories, and it's in Java. So libgit2 kind of sat around for a little while. Yeah, so he wised up, decided to write a managed language, forget about memory leaks and null pointer exceptions, and just do something productive with his life. But my friend Vicent, a guy at GitHub, picked it up and decided that he really liked null pointer exceptions and memory leaks. And so he would carry on libgit2. And he would do that at GitHub. So he was working at GitHub. And he wanted to replace, they had some kind of crufty, you know, hacked together Ruby programs that would inspect the Git repository. And sometimes it would accidentally, you know, make a mistake and corrupt some data. So he wanted to really produce a robust library that was common across a number of implementations that would really do the job. And he did that. He probably picked that up, boy, now I'm feeling old, many years ago at this point. And then I got involved shortly after that and started working on libgit2 as part of my day job, actually. So
perfect. And where do you, we should have asked this at the beginning. Where do you work? And where are you speaking to us from, by the way?
I should cover my head in shame. So I work for Microsoft. I work on the Visual Studio Team Services team at Microsoft. And we host Git repositories, and we do it with libgit2. And I'm speaking to you from my lovely office. I'm here in the Microsoft Research Office in Cambridge, UK. So delightful. Lovely weather. Rainy all the time. Can't beat it.
So I wanted to jump in and ask about this. You work for Microsoft. Is Microsoft actually supporting development on libgit2? Is this an official project?
I don't know if it's official. I don't know what it means to be official exactly. So I'm gonna go out and say no. Libgit2 is basically a joint effort between, you know, the three main committers work for either GitHub or Microsoft. And it's just kind of I wouldn't say it's official. We're a ragtag bunch of hooligans. That's how I'd like to look at myself.
Well, let me ask that a slightly different way. Do you get to do at libgit2 work on the clock?
I do a little bit. It's not my main day job. It used to be for several years. It was my primary day job was getting paid to work on libgit2 and implement features. I somehow accidentally became a manager. So, now it's more a part-time job.
So I'm curious about something. Libgit2, was there ever a libgit1?
That's a great question. So yeah, the name comes from the fact that a couple of the git commands, some of the git functions, git itself, you know, Junio Hamano is the maintainer of git that Linus created, the actual git project, is built with a number of tools. Part of it's Perl, part of it's shell scripts, but a lot of it is actually C. And so it builds a static library called libgit.a that it uses for a number of things, because you wouldn't want 30 functions to all read git commits, for example. So libgit.a, you know, or just libgit, is built into git itself, but it's not modular in a way that you could make a shared library out of it and use it, because if you decided to try to link it into your application, and let's say it hit an error, it would, you know, printf to standard error and die. So not ideal if you want to actually embed it in something like an IDE or a Git UI client, because all of a sudden you'd, you know, hit an error and it would just poof, disappear. So that's the origin of the name.
Okay. There's a couple of different directions I want to go with questions, but the first one that comes to mind is I keep hearing about this project over at Microsoft where they're moving all of their stuff to Git, and they've built a Git file system. And I'm just curious, is libgit2 involved in that? Is that part of what makes GitFS work?
Actually, it's not. We talked about that at some point. So Microsoft is a big Git user at this point. We're moving everybody within the company over to Git. And like you mentioned, we put the Windows team into Git and we needed to do it with GVFS. I don't remember the exact point at which we decided the architecture that GVFS took. We looked at libgit2. We spiked a few things. Ultimately, GVFS, the magic is really in the file system layer, is in the file system driver. So it doesn't really do that much. It doesn't call Git itself. It kind of does some magic around the edges, if you will. And then we made some changes to the Git client to be able to support a few things, and we're open sourcing those back. At the moment, libgit2 actually doesn't even support GVFS repositories. It's something that's kind of on my list of things to tackle, but just haven't gotten around to it yet.
So how does the code work under the hood? Is libgit2 a re-implementation of Git, or does it have a bunch of shared code? Does it actually go in and call things from libgit1, the original? How much of that had to be rewritten?
That's a great question. A lot of it has been rewritten. Fundamentally, Git and libgit2 are under slightly different licenses, which is a subtle legal problem. Git itself is under the GPL version 2. Libgit2 is under the GPL version 2 with a linking exception so that you can use it in whatever proprietary application you want to use it in. Because fundamentally, I don't care what you use libgit2 in. I'm happy if you come and tell me, but that's up to you. And I don't, you know, have any problems with it going into a proprietary product. However, if you make changes to libgit2, those are covered under the GPL, and those need to come back to us, and that's great. Mm-hmm. But that means we can't just go pull a bunch of code out of Git and use it ourselves. We've gone through like on a author by author basis in Git. So, for example, Junio Hamano, I think Linus, I'd have to check the records. Jeff King, another prolific contributor to Git, they all allow us to relicense their code under our license, which is great, but not everybody does that. Some people have, you know, sort of moral problems with the permissiveness of our license. Some people we just couldn't reach. So we are able in some cases to take the Git code base and actually reuse it in libgit2. But fundamentally, there are a number of problems with actually doing just a straight port. We have various abstraction layers, for example. We're a bit more pluggable. And so it's not exactly a one-to-one sort of a translation. So we need to think about things a little bit differently and be a little bit more, I don't know, we need to pay attention to our architecture. So sometimes we're able to just pull off a copy and paste job, but it's unfortunately pretty rare. There's a lot of re-implementation that goes on, for better or worse.
Cool. Well, I've got a lot of questions I want to ask as well. I want to find out who's using this in their day-to-day and how they're using it. We talked about some examples earlier on. And I also want to find out, you know, it seems to be fairly easy to implement, zero dependencies, it says on the website. Really? Zero dependencies? So I want to ask about that as well. But before we do that, we have to thank another sponsor. So we'll come back to that in just a minute, I promise. But first, let's talk a little bit about Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. This episode of Floss Weekly is, of course, brought to you by, as I mentioned, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. The mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. It was dated and needed a client-focused technological revolution, and that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. It's also powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th home, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. Based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/floss. That's rocketmortgage.com/floss. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Floss Weekly. We really appreciate it. We do. Okay, so let's get back to some of the questions I mentioned before. I want to know who's using it. I want to know – well, let's just start there. I'll give them to you. I won't give them all to you and make you remember them all. So first of all, who's using this? Who's using it besides – it sounds like Microsoft's using it. What other companies do we know that's using it, and how are they using it?
Yeah. So broadly, it's split up into two big categories as far as the biggest users. First, you've got the Git hosting providers. So that's where Microsoft uses it. GitHub and GitLab both use it. So when you click merge pull request on – you know, most of the Git hosting providers, you're actually running libgit2. So that's cool. We're really proud of that. That's by far our biggest install base. The other main area is Git clients. So you see things like Git Kraken is a graphical UI client. It's written in Electron, and it talks to Node-Git, which is the Node.js JavaScript wrappers on top of libgit2. And then there's another new client that's really neat called GMaster. It's in beta right now. I think it's Windows only, and it talks to libgit2 sharp, so the .NET bindings on top of libgit2. So that's another really popular place where people might be using libgit2 and might not even know it. And then, of course, a lot of people just want to write a quick script to manipulate something in their Git repository. And instead of writing a shell script, for example, they might write it on libgit2. Might be a little bit more portable than a shell script. It might be a little bit more straightforward. You get some nice, I don't know, type checking, you know, some modern development that a shell script might not be able to offer you. So,
cool.
We don't have a lot of insight into that. You know, a lot of people will whip up a little program on top of libgit2, and we don't really have any idea. I'd love it if, you know, if you're using libgit2, whether you like it or you hate it, I'd love it if people would reach out more.
Yeah, definitely. It's always an issue where you throw these things over the fence and, you know, who knows? I mean, you can tell, you know, probably, Well, let's talk about actually installing using libgit2, how easy it is to get started, because I'm wondering, as part of that process, can you at least tell how many people are downloading it and using it? Well, I guess you don't know if they're using it, but at least downloading it, I guess.
Yeah, I actually have no idea. I suspect that GitHub like exposes some metrics here, but I've literally never looked. So yeah, I don't have any idea.
So how easy is it to get started? We talked about dependencies. It says on the website, zero dependencies, builds out of the box with no dependencies. I mean, that's kind of like the dream come true for a lot of people when they're building their own software, right? So is that really true? Is that the way it works?
Yeah. I wish I could say yeah, but apparently there's a little marketing sprinkled into that website. Zero dependencies might be strictly accurate, but you wouldn't be very usable after that. So the one thing we do try to do, though, is we try to use the operating system support as much as possible. So on Win32, we talk to the native SSL and TLS libraries. On POSIX systems, we try to talk to OpenSSL. So there are dependencies if you want SSL, which of course you do, but they're pretty minimal. You know, it should be stuff that you probably already have installed. The big exception to that is our SSH library. If you want to talk SSH, you need to have libssh2 installed on a Unix system. You can probably get there with a package manager, not a big deal. On Windows, that's a little bit more of a hurdle. But fundamentally, it should be really pretty easy to get started. You need to install CMake and you need to have a compiler. That will get you 90% of the way there in most cases.
Wow, that's cool. And how about documentation? Is it easy to learn how to use the library? I assume it is. It sounds pretty simple, actually.
I think so. Libgit2 existed and was mature by the time I got started. So I jumped in and, you know, had to find my own way. And I thought it was pretty straightforward. The documentation is good. It's one of those areas that I haven't spent a lot of time on, actually. Carlos, the other maintainer of libgit2, has done an excellent job sort of wrangling all the documentation together. And there are some good example code as well.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I want to find out a couple more things. I want to find out, what license this is written in, what the contributor community is like and all that. But I don't want to take up all the time. So let's hand it back over to Jonathan and see if he has any more questions. Jonathan, any more things before we wrap up with those other questions I mentioned?
Sure. So whenever I get to do one of these Floss Weekly episodes, I have a few friends that I kind of send out feelers and say, hey, this is what we're talking about. Is there anything interesting that you know about it? And one guy in particular asked me something about bisecting. So whenever you have a bug that gets introduced in a project, especially if you're using Git, then you can have Git do an automatic bisect where it goes back halfway in time to the beginning of the project and tests to see if the bug is there. And if it's not there, then it jumps, a quarter of the way forward and sees if it's there and uses that to try to narrow down exactly where it's at. And from what my friend was telling me, apparently libgit2 is used in several of these different bisecting tools. Is that something you know anything about?
No, that's awesome. Bisect, like you said, bisect is an amazing piece of functionality to narrow down where a bug is when it was introduced and ultimately find the commit that introduced a problem. So it's very powerful. So I'm super proud that we're actually used there. I had no idea. That's great.
I'll have to see if I can track him back down and get some more information about that, make sure I understood correctly. But yeah, that was the thing that he came up with, that he had to mess with libgit2 to get some bit of bisecting to work. So awesome. I thought that was interesting. And then one other question. You've talked about different programming languages. Well, one of our favorites here, Python. Is there a libgit2 plugin to be able to use it in Python?
You bet. It's called PyGit2.
And is it, fully featured and does everything all the rest of them can? It's a first-class citizen?
It is. I don't know. I've never used it. I'm actually a C guy. I hang my head when I say that. No, that's actually interesting.
No reason to be ashamed of that. The world was built on C.
That's right. But that's an interesting problem you bring up. We've got so many of these bindings. It's tough to make sure that they're all up to date. Not all of them are written by, you know, like the actual libgit2 maintainers, most of them are third parties. So I don't even have a lot of visibility into PyGit2 especially. Carlos, again, my co-maintainer, is a lot closer to that than I am. I would say that the big ones in terms of functionality are Rugged, which are the Ruby bindings, and libgit2 sharp, which are the .NET bindings.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the page now. The bindings, there are a lot of bindings here for just about anything you could really want. And you can find the links to them right on the homepage. Maybe if John can pull this up, it's libgit2.github.com. And you can see there the language bindings there for, you mentioned Rugged and libgit2 sharp, but there's also Objective-C, there's Python, there's Lua. There's even a Perl. If Randall was here, I'm sure he would be excited about that, right? Git raw, which looks like a CPN library to me, if I go back to my Perl days.
That's right.
And you know, PHP, I mean, there's everything there. So you could really, you know, no matter what, Go, I'm glad to see Go there. No matter what you're programming in, there's a binding for your language so you can go develop as you please, I support, which is fantastic. And I assume these are contributed over time, or people start these binding projects independently. I mean, what's the community like around submitting code for this project?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So there's sort of two aspects to that. First is libgit2 itself, and the libgit2 community is honestly, it's pretty small. I would love it if it were bigger, but usually some company jumps in and says, hey, I want to use libgit2. It's going to be a really core part of my production environment, like at GitHub or at Microsoft. And so I'm going to really get involved and contribute to libgit2 and make sure that it's efficient for my use cases and robust and secure and stable. And so that is honestly really quite small as far as the number of developers go. But then there are people who build these bindings and they just jump in, and I don't even, you know, hear about it until all of a sudden they send me an email and it's like, hey, could you link to us on your webpage? I've got this really cool set of bindings for Perl that I use, or Julia or whatever. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. And all of a sudden I go and I get to see what languages people are interested in and what they're building on top of it. And it's really awesome to see. But we haven't done a really excellent job of kind of building a greater community. You know, the NodeGit guys are really tight knit. They're close. They've got their own community, but it doesn't feel like a big community of all the bindings and libgit2. That's something I'd really like to change, actually. Something we do every year, there's a conference called Git Merge. It's where the people who work on Git sort of come together. And one of the days is a Git Contributor Summit. And I would love to see us expand that a little bit this year and have a libgit2 summit where we can talk to all of these people who are using libgit2, whether they're using libgit2 directly or working on Rugged or NodeGit or something like that. So I'm going to have to work to try to make that happen. The one thing we do have is a Slack channel for people who are using and developing libgit2 and, if you want, all the bindings. So so that has actually brought us a little bit closer together. So that's been really nice.
Yeah, cool. And what language – or what language – what license do you use for libgit2?
So libgit2 itself is under the GPL2 with a linking exception, which lets you put it into any proprietary application that you want. It doesn't, you know, infect, if you will. I hate to use that word, but doesn't infect the rest of your application.
Cool. We're going to wrap up here in a few minutes, there's a couple questions I need to ask you. That we ask at the end of every show. But is there anything that we didn't cover? Is there anything that you want to make sure people are aware of? Or do you need help with anything? We mentioned documentation. A lot of times people will raise their hand and say, please help us with documentation. Anything like that that we didn't mention or you might need help with for the project?
Please help us with documentation. No. Actually, our documentation.
Every project ever.
That's right. Actually, I think our documentation is pretty good. But of course, I would love it if it were better, if it were easier for people to get started with libgit2 always. One thing that we do, I suspect that you've seen this before, is the up for grabs. So we have up for grabs tags on our project on GitHub, where there are issues that are perhaps a bit easier to get started with. So if you wanted to start contributing to libgit2 but didn't know where, you can go to our issue tracker and look for the issues marked up for grabs. If you're not familiar with this, there's a lot of details on upforgrabs.net, I think. That explains how this process works. And the idea is that we'll be gentle and try to get you started and contribute your first pull request to libgit2.
Hey, I want to jump back in with a quick question if I can. Just thought of something. What is the speed comparison? How quick is libgit2 compared to vanilla Git? Is it significantly faster or slower, or is there a parity there?
I would like to say that there's a parity. There are definitely some things that are faster. There are definitely some things that are slower. It really goes to what we've optimized. So one of the things I said was that libgit2 is used extensively in Git hosting providers. And so our merge code is actually quite a bit more efficient than the stock Git merge. When GitHub actually swapped it out, they used to use Git. Now they use libgit2. To merge your pull requests. They've got this really cool blog on their engineering blog, the GitHub engineering blog, that kind of shows how they implemented their move from Git to libgit2 and did it safely and stably, and the speed benefits that they got out of it. So it's a lot less resource intensive. So we're really happy about that. Another team, the GitKraken team, implemented some optional parallelization of checkout. So that actually on Windows makes checkout extremely fast. So there are definitely places where people have gone in and really tuned it to optimize libgit2. And there are places that we haven't. Like our blame code is not ideal. It's definitely a little bit slower than Git.
So I'm curious. I'm hearing that there are at least two, maybe three or four different implementations, you know, in the various projects of core Git things. Has there been any look into trying to put all of this into a single library, and maybe that's libgit2, or you know, maybe it's done in upstream Git, and using that single library for all of the different Git programs. So I guess one way this could look is if, you know, the Git maintainer woke up tomorrow and said, let's re-implement Git using libgit2, which is a bit crazy, but has anything like that ever been talked about or even thought about?
Yeah, not seriously. You'd think it's the logical conclusion to this problem, wouldn't you?
Yes.
But no, in some sense, I don't know. In some sense, we serve two different masters. The Git community itself is very focused on what they're doing, and libgit2 is a lot less focused on some of those things. Like I care very deeply about making sure that we are able to exist inside of another application and do so very, you know, smartly. Whereas the Git community itself is kind of monomaniacally, and that's not a criticism, monomaniacally focused on Git itself, which I think is the right attitude for them. So they're really pushing forward new, you know, improvements. Like if you wanted a good example is going back to the GVFS stuff. The guys at Microsoft working on GVFS are putting that code into stock Git, taking it to the mailing list and working on the implementation details there. And thankfully, I get to stay more or less out of that. And once it's nice and baked, I can take it and put it into libgit2. So in some sense, you know, I like to look at it as we're kind of working on the stable, pluggable library, and the Git community itself is working on the forward-looking parts of it.
Cool. We do have one question from the chat room. We always love to take questions from the chat room. So I think we addressed this earlier on in the episode, but maybe it wasn't clear. The Andromedan wants to know if there's any effort to have, this is in quotes, is there any effort to have the Git command line to switch to using libgit2? So I guess, I mean, we didn't really talk about the Git client. If you're using Git, like in a Linux environment, to do pull requests and things like that, I guess the question is there any differences if you're using libgit2? Is there any crossover between the actual command line client and the Git libgit2 library?
So there's not right now, and every once in a while somebody proposes that. Let me give you the real concrete reason that this might actually be a good idea. On Windows, Git for Windows is kind of a huge project, and it's a kind of a huge challenge to maintain. The maintainer is awesome and does a great job. But the problem is that, like I mentioned, Git itself is written in a little bit of Perl, a little bit of Python, a little bit of shell scripts, a little bit of C. And so it does things like calls, you know, the shell scripts will do things like call awk and sed. And that's not something that exists on a Windows platform. So when you install Git for Windows, you actually get a copy of sed and a copy of awk and a copy of Perl and all of these dependencies that it has. That's really where that website of ours is going when it says zero dependencies. So the real use case, in my opinion, for starting to think about something like that, where you would replace Git itself with a command line that talks to libgit2, would be to reduce the amount of dependencies on Windows, especially. However, Johannes, the maintainer of Git for Windows, seems to be perfectly happy to keep, you know, investing a crazy amount of effort of his to keep doing that. So until he stops being happy with that, I'm not going to push too hard on that. The other real nice sort of use case would be for me. If we had a command line wrapper on top of libgit2 that looked like Git, we could use their unit tests. And that would validate libgit2 at a very deep level, because it doesn't matter what a spec says or what you think should operate. Unless libgit2 works exactly the same way Git does, we're not working correctly. So it would be great to just leverage their unit tests.
Yeah, for sure. Great. Well, thanks for answering that. I do encourage people to ask questions in the chat room, because we do like to get to them. So if you're listening and you haven't asked a question in chat room, we're gonna wrap it up here in a minute. But for future shows, please ask. We'd love to pass those on to our guests. So I do need to ask a few questions just in wrapping up. There's always a few questions we end the show with. The first one is, what's your favorite scripting language?
So I'm going to show my age again, and I'm sorry, Randall's not here because it's Perl.
Oh, really? You're Perl guys. I mean, it's they're getting fewer and fewer these days. So many people are, you know, cutting over to Python. You still use it on it's your favorite, but do you still use it regularly?
Yeah, whenever I need a quick and dirty script, I use Perl, because I used to write a lot of Perl. I used to be a website guy. I built websites on top of scientific computing platforms. And back in the day, you wrote Perl. So it's just baked into my head still. I can't evict it. And so it's just quicker for me to do that than having to look up how to do something in Ruby or Python.
Cool. And the second question we always have to ask is, what's your favorite text editor?
For me, it's Vim. Although Visual Studio Code has been, and I hate to say that because I'm the, you know, I work for Microsoft. It sounds like I'm, you know, a shill. But Visual Studio Code is really kind of impressive.
Okay. Well, that's valid. I mean, you know, you do work at Microsoft, so it's okay to say that. And you know, don't be ashamed of that. It's okay. The open source and Linux community are welcoming Microsoft into the game these days. It's not the other way around. We're very welcoming here, and we love that Microsoft is really going after Linux in a big way with some of their projects and things. So I think it's great, and we really have loved having you on as well. It's been a great show and great to hear about libgit2. So Edward Thompson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. All right. So, Jonathan, what do you think about libgit2? I mean, it sounds like, you know, you've been able to at least glean some some good details here. Is this something that you would recommend to others? Are you excited about it?
So it has a as it sits now, it kind of has a narrow use case, but it sounds like for the cases where you need something like it, libgit2 is the tool to go to. So I think probably the use case where it impacts most of us the most is, you know, the fact that GitHub uses it underneath the hood. And so, you know, we all, you know, weekly we interact with libgit2. We just don't realize it because it's on GitHub. I'm curious, and, you know, of course, now that we let him go, I think of all the questions to ask. I'm curious if GitLab also uses it. I would assume that they do or something similar. But what I found really interesting, probably the most interesting, was the talk about what they could do if they made a command line wrapper around it and then being able to tap into all of Git's unit tests. And that's a very, very interesting way to I've always found unit testing to be interesting. But the idea that you could, because you're doing the same thing as another program, you could then use that other program's unit testing to test your own code. Just super interesting. And if they ever make that work, we need to have them back and talk about unit testing with them, just to, you know, get a better understanding of how exactly that works out.
Right. Right. Well, you mentioned GitLab on their site. They do mention that GitLab is indeed using it. As well as lots of other people. I mean, Canonical, Bitbucket from Atlassian, so just Beanstalk, I mean, and of course GitHub that we've mentioned several times. So, you know, there does seem to be, it's one of these quiet projects, I think, that sits in the background, like you were saying, and you don't know that you're using it behind the scenes, but it's there and it's necessary and it's doing great stuff. And that's what I love about this show, is that we get to surface some of these projects and libraries like this that don't always, you know, make the front page of your favorite open source website or something like that. You know, I mean, they're used every day. They're behind the scenes. There's all these great language bindings, so you can use it with whatever language you want to. And it's just sitting in the background doing its things. And there's great people behind the scenes, like Edward, that's working on this and kind of shepherding it along and making sure that things are working for the end users, who, again, don't realize that they're using this library. So, I think it's great, I look forward to all the great things that are coming up with libgit2.
I'm reminded of an old story.
Go ahead.
If I can jump in, I'm reminded of an old story at a conference somewhere. So the speaker says, "How many of you used Linux on your desktop this week?" And, you know, 2 or 3 people or 5%, whatever, raised their hand. And he's like, "How many of you used Google this week?" And everybody raised their hand. And he's like, "Think about that." You're all using Linux, just not running it on your desktop. And so I think libgit2 is probably very much in the same position, just because, you know, it powers the things that powers us to do what we do.
Yeah, yeah. And the same could be said of, you know, all the Android devices out there now. I mean, Linux is really behind all of these things that make our lives a lot easier. And libgit2 in a similar fashion is making our lives easier. Okay, I'll try a different transition now. Speaking of making our lives easier, you can make your life easier by listening to Floss Weekly every week. And coming up on Floss Weekly, I finally made it. It took a while to get there, but we've got some great shows coming up, seriously. I believe it's still scheduled for October 11th. I know we had some hiccups with the schedule for today's show, if you're wondering why this is on Thursday. There's some Google news yesterday. But coming up on October 11th, we're going to have Michael Larabell talking about openbenchmarking.org. So if you're into benchmarking, I think that would be a great show to listen to. And then on October 18th, we have Matt Ellis coming on talking about Flogo. That's another one I haven't heard of, but you can go to flogo.io to learn what that's all about. And then last but not least, on October 25th, David Barrett will be joining us to talk about BedrockDB. I believe it's a database of some sort. Which will be great to talk about as well. So be sure to join us for those shows coming up. I think you mentioned you're going to be on next week, Jonathan, and I think Dan Lynch is hosting, if memory serves me correct, because Randall's still out on more cruises. yeah, we're going to have Dan back to host. It's always exciting to see him come back. Longtime host, started out early on. It'd be great to see him in the hosting spot. once again for next week. So definitely tune in for that. Speaking of things that are coming up, what's coming up with you, Jonathan? Anything you want to plug to wrap up the show?
I don't have anything to plug. My schedule is filled with work around here. You know, I've recently purchased a house, and so all of my spare time is going into trying to get that ready to move into, and then just bread and butter everyday stuff. So nothing horribly interesting to plug on my side.
Nothing too horribly interesting, but it sounds like a lot of work. That's
yes,
for sure.
A lot of work.
That's great. I can plug a few things. Number one is this book that I wrote. It's actually called Linux for Makers. So not only does Linux run on Android and power things that you use every day like Google, but you can also use it to build some really cool projects. So I'd really appreciate it if you check that out. You can buy it on Amazon or buy it wherever. It's especially good for people that don't use Linux and people that really want to use Linux as part of using a Raspberry Pi. That's what I really wrote the book for, because I run into those folks a lot at my makerspace, which is the second thing I want to plug, which is BenicianMakerspace.org. You can go there, find out if you're in the Northern California, like north of San Francisco, that area, you're looking for a good makerspace. Benicia Makerspace is a great place for you. Come check us out. We have really low monthly rates, and we're a nonprofit. And speaking of nonprofit, if you go to our website, we're actually running a campaign right now to try to raise a few funds to keep us in the black, so to speak, while we build our membership. So if you want to take advantage of a great campaign, get a cool t-shirt, or you can even get a 3D printer through the campaign if you want to, that we'll send to you directly. Please check that out and contribute if you don't mind. All right, with that, we're going to wrap it up. Another great episode. Thanks again to Jonathan for co-hosting, and we'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.